Welcome to the Start Thinking Forward podcast, the ultimate arena where the future of entrepreneurship is forged today. This is not just another podcast. This is a sanctuary for visionaries, disruptors, and game changers. Each episode unveils a treasure trove of secrets from industry titans and trailblazers. They don't just share stories, they impart wisdom, reveal strategies, and celebrate their hard-fought triumphs. This is your exclusive pass to the behind-the-scenes of success. Here, it's not about scratching the surface. It's about diving into the abyss of innovation, challenges, and unparalleled growth. The conversations are deep, the insights are profound, and the takeaways are monumental. But make no mistake, this is not a lecture hall. It's a dynamic exchange of wit, humor, and inspiration, making every episode not just a lesson, but an experience. So if you're here to do more than just dream, if you're here to build legacies and break barriers, you've come to the right place. Prepare to be enlightened, energized, and most importantly, propelled to start thinking forward. Let the journey begin.
Today, we have a guest who has lived multiple lifetimes in just one, Josh Parrish, from watermelon harvesting in South Alabama to real estate mogul and self-improvement coach. Josh's journey is nothing short of extraordinary. So buckle in, folks, because it's definitely going to be a ride. So, Josh, introduce yourself to the audience and let us know a little bit more about you before we start getting into the questions and everything.
Brandon, that was a heck of an introduction, man. I don't know if I can do any better than that. But but yeah, lived many a lifetime over the course of these 36 years. Grew up in the watermelon field in South Alabama, bounced around all over the South. Stepdad was in retail, and that allowed me to get an experience in the sales game and then, you know, understanding fashion and whatnot, and played baseball growing up. And yeah, man, just that sales and athletics background translated into my competitive nature and into my profession, which is sales and coaching. And yeah, man, currently I am still a realtor and I'm selling real estate down here in Destin, Florida, but making the transition over into a personal development coach and speaker. So about 3 months in on that, going well, just still formulating my message and things like that, getting the odds and ends tied up. But yeah, man, I mean, it's this has always been my dream. So I appreciate you having me on the show. So we matched on Podmatch, and that thing's a blessing for sure.
Definitely. So I know, I mean, I read about you, and one of the reasons that I wanted you on the show is, you know, when I first started to Start Thinking Forward show, I always said it's real talk for real people. This platform doesn't do that topic-based motivation. We talk about real stuff that people are going through. Like, I've had so many ups and downs in my personal business that allows me to be where I'm at today. And still, it's still an upward progression. So my next question to you, well, first question would be, how have pivotal moments in your personal journey influenced your success that you currently have right now?
Man, you know, every time things are going well, I get really uncomfortable because it could be a bad habit that I put myself through trials and tribulations nonstop to test my strength and my will. And it's not always a good thing, but I try to take lessons from losses, and I feel like I never lose. Although, while you know, the not so great circumstance might be occurring and I don't have the great feelings about it, I know that I'm learning a lesson and I'm going to be able to take that with me in the future. So yeah, you'll never lose if you take a lesson from the losses.
I agree with you. So I know for a fact who you are today is a combination of all the things that you've been through. So if we take that into account, obviously the Josh Parrish that we see before us today isn't the Josh Parrish that started. And I know this reading your bio, right? That there was a lot of setbacks and hurdles you had to overcome. Can you share a little bit of insight about that and how you were able to overcome that, that can help the listening audience understand who Josh Parrish is and why he's here on the Start Thinking Forward show today?
Yeah, man. Great. I mean, that's a great, great topic to dive into right there. I don't like when people repeat the stories to themselves where they relive traumas, but I did come from a place of, I was always the new kid in town. We would move around every year, year and a half, 2 years. And I was overweight. I was a fat kid. I was athletic. Mm-hmm. But being the new kid with cool clothes, because my stepdad was in retail, mm-hmm. You really don't understand why people are being mean to you when you're young, because mm-hmm. they could be being mean. They could be mean to you because they are lacking something in their life. More than likely, they're projecting on you. So what I mean, at an early age, I figured out people are jealous. At the same time, the world is never wrong. If people are being mean to you about you being fat, if you're being hazed because you're meek and you're weak, not that it's right, but obviously that's feedback. So you got to make changes if you don't, because it's cause and effect. If you're the new fat kid, you got a target on your back. Even if you were the cool kid with everything, you pull up in a, your dad's got a Maserati or whatever, which I didn't have that, but you have everything. People are still going to be hating on you. So it's really that mindset of just understanding, like, the, when someone is projecting on you, you try to put your mind in their position. You try to wear their shoes. So grew up, fat kid, moved around, and I see that as beneficial to my development, because, well, I got to recreate myself every time I moved. Now, I didn't start getting in shape until about high school, but I mean, I was a baller. I could play just about all types of ball. Like, people are like, dang, that fat kid can get down. But but yeah, the world is never wrong. And again, you got to watch out for people projecting on you, because it's because they're lacking something in their lives.
Wow. So I know that you're on this journey, personal mindset development, coach. You're trying to, energize people. So with that being said, let's dive a little deeper in that concept. Like, for instance, and this is not something necessarily on agenda, but it's just a wild card question here. Do you think, what's your opinion about bullying? Because you mentioned that earlier, like you said, the world is not wrong. And, we live in this world now where, there's anti bullying. And just recently I heard someone said, well, bullying is needed. And I thought about it. I'm like, why would bullying, like, because that is when people are telling you that you're not something, like you're not adding up. Like if you're, like you said, you're at that point, you consider yourself to be the fat kid. So people will point out to you that you're not the same, or you're not normal. You're abnormal in a way. Being abnormal, then you say, wow, I'm not getting the feedback that I want. I'm not getting accepted the way that I want. So it's going to force me. I mean, dude, I've seen your videos on Instagram. And I mean, like, the audience may not be able to see, but this guy's ripped. And I know for a fact to have that type of size, it took a level of dedication, right? So my question to you now is, what do you think? Do you think a certain level of bulliness, being having that happen to you, you think that affected you in a positive way? Even though in the moment it may have felt negative and hurtful, what do you think about that?
Yeah, man. There's obviously a point of diminishing returns, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you continue to be ridiculed, you're crushed into the ground. But yes, I think that bullying is necessary. I think hazing is necessary. But is it right? No, but it's never going away. It's like people praying for world peace. Now, I hope that world peace happens, and I hope that there's not hungry people in the world. But listen, it's up to us to create our own heaven on earth. It is. Mm-hmm. And you don't have a life well lived unless you have the battle scars to prove that you actually went through something. If you don't have any scars, then what did you do? If you never fell down, if you never failed, if you never got your teeth knocked in, like, you didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. So, and I used to want to be a monk on a mountain, right? Like, back in my 20s when I was, you know, not a great salesperson at all. I didn't understand sales. I mean, I was a salesman, but I didn't understand, like, hey, you could actually be a good person and be a salesman. Now, I didn't get over on everyone, but yeah, the monk on the mountain, there's no glory in that. And yes, I mean, then being the monk is great, but the monk, I don't want to say the monk doesn't have scars, so I don't know monks, but to go hide from the world, like, that's not providing value to anyone. But yeah, we kind of got off on the whole bullying thing, but yeah, I think bullying is absolutely necessary, but people, there should be better resources on bullying, because the whole, like, soft-handed, oh, bullying's wrong, let's fight
against
that's not doing anything but making people sound, every time I hear anti-bullying, I'm like, those guys are just weak. Like,
yeah, exactly.
I'm not an advocate for bullying, but
I'm the same. I'm the same way. Like, I don't believe in bullying, but, you know, coming from environment, coming from the military, it was at those pivotal moments that I rose to the occasion. Like, when someone said, you're not carrying your weight, you're not, you know, like, I picked the wrong person, or I made the wrong, like, that I'm the type of person where that gets under my skin just a little bit, if more than a little bit, because I'm very competitive in nature. So is that idea of, like, well, yeah, that was negative feedback that I got. I didn't like it. It hurt. But now I know, like, the reason it hurt 9 times out of 10 is because of the truth. And the truth hurts. It's bitter and it's cold. But now I have the ability to make a change. And I think that's a lot of what you talk about and what your platform's about. Correct.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm a huge advocate of change. Reality shifts in minuscule ways as we progress through time constantly. Like, it is always shifting. And it's just something that we have to remember. There's changes. It's inevitable. And we can either be kicking and clawing and fighting against it, but change is happening. So you might as well embrace it. And it's all about designing your life, lifestyle by design, because whether or not you're actively planning your life, if you're not planning it out and taking actions to build the life you want, then you're getting handed the short end of the stick. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants the short end of the stick, but so many folks in the world are just passive on the lot that they're dealt. And yes, we need to be content, but at the same time, just because we're here today doesn't necessarily mean we can't be here tomorrow.
Exactly. Like,
there's leverage points all throughout the universe, through the world. You go outside and you recognize an opportunity. You could have a conversation with this person. You could do this and this and this that results in this. And, like, you could be on 5 levels higher in the next 24 hours, depending on the moves. So, yeah, I've figured out leverage points 20 years ago, like, just hyper acceleration through strategic movements, and you can do anything you want, and whatever you want to do, somebody's already done it 10 times faster, 10 times bigger. Like, that's standard. There's nothing new in the world. That's for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, that's an interesting, perspective. And I look at it, and maybe, you know, I'm trying to look at it through your lens and your story. To me, it almost seems like one of the things that you really have going for yourself is that you knew during certain moments, intricate moments, where you needed to pivot. And that's the biggest thing with a lot of entrepreneurs and business owners. They don't know when to pivot. And that's kind of leading into this next question for you. Like, if you could give us, like, a SOP, standard operating procedure, on how you generated over $150 million in real estate leads, right? Because I think that that's important. That's not something that we want to skip over, because there's so many people struggling in business and they think that, you know, oh, I have to do this, or I don't know, I don't have the expertise, or this, that, and the third. Well, at the same time, if you're listening to this podcast right now or you're seeing this, understand that Josh wasn't born this way. He had to pivot and make steps. Talk a little bit about those decision making, that those SOPs you had to put in place to even get close to 150 million in leads.
That was 150 million in leads in about seven-ish months. So yeah, I flipped that switch on, and it was crazy. But there was a lot of prior work to flipping that switch on, and to know when to pivot. There's so many contradicting sayings, you know, like go down with the ship as a captain, and then, you know, like burn the ships, you know, like stay on the island no matter what and fight like hell until you're king of the mountain or whatever. And then, you know, like there's always, it's like, just know when the ship is sinking and get off. Like I'm not doing those sayings any justice, but there's a saying for either way you want to go. Right. Exactly. But at any point in time where I didn't believe in the product, I would jump ship, because I know one thing right now. And this is why I haven't accelerated in my coaching business just yet, is because I haven't completely crafted my product, because I know that I can create tremendous momentum like that if I believe in the product. And I know that the teachings are there, but I'm thinking about client experience. And once I craft that, not perfect, because perfect is an excuse just for not ever getting out there in the world. But once I find, you know, that solid message, which we're getting there. But once I have that, then I'll put it out in the world. But you have to have that. You have to believe in the product, and you have to believe in your pitch, because if your pitch is I'm going back to the 90s here. If your pitch is whack, right? Like whack.
Well, it's true. Yeah.
Your pitch is whack and not getting the sack, you know, like, but yeah, like if people smell when you need people smell when you need a sale. Right. Mm-hmm. So the toughest time to sell anything is when you need to sell it. Absolutely. Like if it's getting paid from this next sale, like people know, right. Mm-hmm. That's not the time to be selling things for sure.
But yeah, I know that firsthand, brother. I know that firsthand because when I got out of the military, one of the first things I went into, I got into the financial sector and getting paid on commission. And there'll be times like, you know, I was licensed in multiple states. So I would travel and, you know, I had to purchase these leads, and I'm going and I'm like, you know, man, I'm spending money I don't have, hoping that I make a sale that's not guaranteed. So now if I don't make the sales, I'm in even a worse situation than if I just sat at the house, you know, because now I spent money I didn't have to get these leads. I'm having to travel to these locations. Hopefully I make a sale. And let me tell you something. I remember one of my biggest downfalls was I went to DC. So I'm coming from North Carolina and I'm listening to these sales guys telling me how I should sell. And I take that same rhetoric from North Carolina and I took it to DC and I came back with a goose egg. Right. I was defeated when I came back. So I completely resonate with that so much.
But man, you know, my next point is it's not always the best salesperson that makes the most sales. Mm. It's the person that can pitch the most. And if you.
Whoa, Josh, back up. Say that one more time.
All right.
that's powerful. Wow.
Yeah, it's not always the best salesperson that makes the most sales. It's the person that gets to pitch the most. It's the one with the most opportunities to get in front of folks. One, mastery is found within the basics, and the only way to, you know, get to mastery is repetition. But if you can figure out a way to generate your own leads, because I've had plenty of sales jobs where it was like, buy these leads and then go close them. But you don't know if they were like filling out something on like a word womp game or.
Yeah.
I've had all sorts of sales jobs, and most sales jobs that you don't, that make people like accountants, you know, like
exactly.
Like the Oklahoma football drill has made more basketball players than anything, you know, like that saying. Yeah, man, I've had some terrible sales jobs, but if you can figure out how to generate your own leads, then you're golden. because you shouldn't be spending money to generate leads, especially like if you run ads, then yes. I mean, I'd say that that's probably okay. If you're doing the in-house stuff to, so you can see like what's working, what's not, but just throwing money at a lead source, like in real estate, big lead source is Zillow, and they could charge you $200 to $500 per lead. And like
nothing.
Yeah. I mean, like, and I've bought leads and it was dumb, like so dumb because you don't know them. If you can. Yeah. And the way that I generated the leads, and I'm probably shouldn't be saying it, but I'll just go ahead and say it. So I did it probably about 1,000 times before I created my standard operating procedures. But the informed real estate sales call, I started from that. And all of the neighborhood information is within the county records. So I'd go in, I'd see who owned the house, I'd see what they bought it for, in what year. And then I would do like private investigation deal where I found them on social media and, you know, other houses that they've sold or purchased or what they own. And I would fill out these one page reports. And then through the power of different websites, I would generate phone numbers for this person. And then I would find it. I would just dial and dial and dial and finally get somebody on the phone. And then I'll say, I'll start out with John. It's always the first name. John. And they're like, yes. And I'm like, hey, Josh Parrish, Destin Realtor. Sir, the market's the hottest we've ever seen it. And it looks like you can make $1 million if you sold your house. You ever thought about selling that thing? That was pretty much because I didn't have this long script. I hopped in there. I said, I identified myself as a friend and then a professional. And I knew they had a house on the street. And then I knew that they could make $1 million if they sold it. And that was like 10 seconds because I appreciate their time and I need to move on to the next one. And like, bam, bam, bam. And then when I started to have success with that, that's when I created screen shares with Zoom and I outsourced it to Filipinos. And so therefore I had a Filipino data hoarder that, you know, worked 8 hours a day. I got a database of 8,000 leads. Page reports of everything you'd ever want to know about people, direct phone number, other houses owned, their spouses, their kids, et cetera, et cetera. And then just a really dialed in script. And then I had Filipino dialers dialing those numbers and asking them, you know, basically acting like they were investors. Say, hey, you ever thought about selling your house? Think you could probably make $1 million. And then when they said yes, then my Filipino dollars never called them back. But then I snuck in and said, hey man, you ever thought about selling that thing? And I kind of just knew a little bit more than the dollars did. But then Apple changed their whole algorithms with spam pops up anytime there's like, but we didn't do robo dialing, which is completely illegal. It was all hunt and peck. And my dialer did not pose as agent, which is also illegal. We were doing everything legal and, you know, they were saying that they were investors and they were thinking about buying stuff, but it was more so just, we were uncovering opportunities. And whenever I flipped that switch during that time, man, it was so much momentum that I was ready to go into the lead gen space because I just know that so many realtors, I think there's like a 98-99% rescission rate after 2 or 3 years for realtors. Like everybody quits except for a few in real estate, you know, just like, that's cool. But, I flipped that switch and I was more focused on generating the leads and building out the systems and actually closing, which I closed about 10-15%. And that was my second year ever in real estate generating those leads.
So, I mean, that's impressive. I mean, most, you got to think about it, I'm not remembering the exact statistics on this, but I know I've seen something that said the average real estate agent, especially if they're new to the industry, may have even went from 0 to 2 transactions within a 5-year span. And I thought that was interesting that so many people have a real estate license. I'm here in Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm telling you, I don't care where you go, you can go get a haircut. Someone in that shop, they could be a barber, they got a real estate license. Haven't sold a house in years, but they got a license. So I want to kind of caveat back to what you said, because I think that's so important, because when we're talking about lead, that's the lifeblood of a business if you can turn those leads into actual contracts, right? You know, contacts turn into contracts. I'm a big 10X Grant Cardone follower. So I follow those principles. Like the more contacts you have, you get contract. But the biggest elephant in the room that you mentioned is that you're able to create these lists, one. And second, you know, you said you start off. The biggest thing that I know that people have a problem with is this. If you're an average salesperson, this phone right here turns into a freaking monster, right? Because they don't want to get rejected. So when you get call on that phone, oh my God, I'm getting rejected. So one is how you overcame that. Second, you know, the idea of you hired someone else to start doing that. And I think a lot of business owners, CEOs need to think, I'm not good at the phone or I'm scared of the phone. I need to come up with an SOP on how can I still be in business? Because at the end of the day, just because you're not good at it doesn't negate the fact that it doesn't need to be done. It needs to be done. It has to be done or you're going to be out of business. Can you talk a little bit more about that? I think that's so important if everyone is listening to this.
Yeah, man. Well, yeah. So people hate the phone because their script sucks. They don't know their script. And then it's so wordy and they haven't even thought about the end user. Like, say you call an attorney. Like, so the DISC profile, D-I-S-C, four different types of personalities, very, very different folks, all of them. You could be calling Grandma Ethel. You could be calling Neil the attorney, right? Mm-hmm. So, but it needs to be short and sweet. It needs to be informative, and it needs to talk about something that's benefiting the other person very, very quickly. And if you can figure out a way to talk about the money very fast, then that's the way to go. Especially in real estate, always talking about the money. Like, I never want to talk about a dream home, which, I mean, that might be why someone, you know, buy, like, in the real estate market for doing a deal. But I never, like, I always want to talk about the money with folks. But, yeah, the reason why people hate the phone is because they hate the script. The script, they don't know the script. And then the script, whoever wrote the script might not have even been an actual dialer. So it's just, if you can provide value on that phone call very quickly, people are going to show appreciation. And especially here, because down here in Destin, Florida, I'm calling $1 million plus houses. These are people that are actually doing stuff in life. So they have, I mean, they're trying to go. Like, that's not everybody. You know, some folks sit there and talk to you, especially if you provided value on the phone. But if you don't have any money, you have to start with the phone. Like, you have to, because there's no other way to go about it. You can either sit there like on a car lot, or you can be fed leads, or you can try to go to the grocery store and be like, you want to use me as your realtor? And like, that's go, yeah. You know, the Chamber of Commerce meetings, that also sucks. Everybody else did like they too. Like, you don't want to, like, so, yeah. But yeah, it's just, if you can figure out a way to the informed sales phone call, then it takes, like, there's still going to be, can we say assholes on here? Like, I just said it, but there's going to be people that are mean to you on the phone, even in the informed sales call space. But if you know that you're providing value to the people, like, you know, that neighborhood, and I'm speaking from a realtor, but you know that neighborhood, you know what sold, you know what their house could sell for, and you have ways to keep providing value, there's really no reason to be anxious on that phone call. Like, there's just not, because you're just there, you're laying it out there. And like, not every phone call is going to be an appointment or a sale. So that's what real estate taught me, is like, you're going to have to follow up and nurture these folks. Very, very few folks, which I have called, and some folks have said, yeah, I want to sell my house. And you come over at 5 and I'm like, those are the scariest, because you're like, oh God, like, this is hot. This is super hot. Like, I can't mess this up. Like, there's no play in it. Like, you have to go. they're ready. Like, so, but yeah, just that, the informed sales call through generating your own leads. And that's how you get over the fear of the phone. But listen, you can have the most valuable phone script. you can be the number one salesperson. Because I started out, I've always had a knack for getting high space mentors, like very, very high achievers. And even those guys, like, they do it because they know that that's what they're built for. But even they don't want to make the calls sometimes. But it doesn't stop them. They're just like, well, after I get my feet wet, after I do a couple, then I understand it. So
yeah, but that's where discipline comes in. I mean, like, that's the true definition of discipline is like doing what you need to do despite how you feel about it. You know, you're motivating yourself to do. And another thing that you mentioned that's spot on. Like, I literally just seen a video that Grant had and he talked, you know, explicitly to the fact that don't hide the offer. Don't run away from the money. Like, put that up front. Like, you know, people have a webinar and they're selling something and you got to go through this whole 60-minute webinar before you find out what that is. He's like, nah, do it at the beginning, right? Give them that incentive base at the beginning. Be upfront with it. And then you touch point on the script, right? If you don't know how to create a script, business owners, and if you're just tuning in right now, this is an electrifying show. This is we're here joined with Josh Parrish, real estate mogul, life coach, motivator, intense, bodybuilder, you know, everything. And I'm excited because at the end of the day, I knew that this was going to be an intense conversation just because of just the way how you are. And you're very transparent about everything you went through. And you're not talking that topic based. You're like, hey, this is what it is. This is why a lot of people feel this way. So this goes into the next thing that I want to ask you about. Selflessness. Mm-hmm. What exactly? I think what you said was the concept of selflessness. How is it the cornerstone of a team in scaling a business? You would say, how important is that?
I know it sounds crazy for you to say you need to be selfish before you're selfless, but you can't pour from an empty cup. And if everybody takes care of what they need first, making sure that they're showing up 100%, then they can give to everyone else to the 10th power. But if everybody's just starving themselves of their most basic needs to go give to someone else, then everybody's just kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul. Everybody's running off of fumes. Everybody's being passive. Everybody's, not bringing them full selves to the game. And that's what you need, is for everyone to show up ready. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's when I've never heard anybody say selflessness or selflessness. You can say it either way. It still works out the same, but you just can't pour from an empty cup. You have to take care of yourself. On the airplanes, when there's turbulence and the little mask drop, they say, put your mask on first and then help whoever put their mask on. 'Cause you have to be able to breathe before you do anything else. And so many people out there, which I'm all about replenishing the well, over giving, you know, giving back, reciprocation. I'm all about that. But when it comes to, like, if you need rest, if you need fuel, if you need to step away for a minute, then you got to do it to preserve yourself. Because if you just keep giving, then you're going to end up projecting something bad on someone else when you really didn't mean to.
So that's crazy. Wow. That's powerful. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I mean, just to relate that back into management, whether, because I was kind of talking from a family sense, but I mean, who you're managing, that is your family, your team, your family, the group at your business. I mean, it's all, you got to work in unison. And yeah, so it's all the same.
So that kind of goes into the next question, that art of self-mastery. How do you think that applies to business and life in general?
Well, all too often we take on way too much at one time. So if we can really focus on the bare bone basics of who we are and what we need, and we figure that out, and we can fulfill those needs, like we do it like we know the back of our hand, then we can go take on something else. But again, mastery is found within the basics. And a lot of times people want to add on new habits and tactics to say like, oh, I'm this new high level person, which really and truly self-mastery is probably more the subtraction of things that are going to make us take back steps, subtraction of the old vices, the old ways, because at the end of the day, there's a handful of action items that are going to help us accelerate rapidly through life. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, we have to show up for ourselves. We have to treat ourselves right. And yeah, I mean, that's a self-mastery. It's not as difficult. I mean, it's a difficult path, and it's simple, but it's not easy. So
Now when you say it's simple, but not easy, can you give us some examples of your own personal life and the challenges you face where that has been a key intricate part of what you had to do in order to get to the next level?
Yeah, man. I mean, so with my body transformation over the last few months, I love drinking beer. Like I love cold beer, especially in the summertime. I've smoked a lot of weed in my day. Uh-huh. And not saying you can't be in good shape drinking and smoking. You can't be a high level performer drinking smoke, but at the same time, are you your best self when you're inebriated? And are you showing up a strong, powerful man whenever you're diving into the vices that make you escape reality? And that answer is no. Like something I always ask myself is, am I battle ready? Like if it went down right now, am I ready? And you know, like so I went through a 3-month wave of pretty hardcore dieting and fitness. And then I'm like, well, you know, now I'm going to take a little break. And I was still kind of eating well, but now I'm ready to hop back on it. So, you know, this removal of the old vices is where it's at. Sorry, I kind of lost my train of thought there, but.
It's okay. Like, I'm following along. It's just that you have so many dynamics of you. And one thing I always want to do is make sure that people truly understand, like, because I mean, you're talking about so much. And I know earlier you said about dialing down your message and you're going to put that out. I'm going to be honest with you, Josh, like you really have it. And I think you're really inspiring to others because there's an old saying that says you came here to give people what they wanted to see, a reflection of oneself and where they should aim to be. And you're kind of the epitome of that. Is like you can start from nothing and through that self-mastery, through those steps of you knowing yourself, you overcoming those setbacks, those hurdles, but having the discipline to maintain, you know, to be battle ready, you know, and that's a big thing you learn in the military. Is like, are you battle ready? Have you went through the battle drill, right? And battle drills in the military, in the Army, I was at one point in time an infantry guy, is the idea of you do something so much that you don't have to think about it. An example of that is I could be walking one direction and all of a sudden I hear a gunshot without anything. I automatically know I need to get cover and start returning fire. It's automatic. I don't have to think about it. It's not a what's happening. It's not a I'm freezing. What's happening? As soon as I hear gunfire, I'm taking a knee, trying to find cover, and I'm returning fire. It's a battle drill. You do it so much that it becomes part of you. And I think that that's an intricate part of that self-mastery part of where you at and how you evolve where you're at.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, and anything new is going to feel foreign. And discomfort, change, it's one of the most scary things for most folks. But even though if it's new, just know that you're not going to be the best up front. You have to get comfortable with feeling kind of stupid. Like as long as and that's like I've never feared failure. I've always feared success, and that's why I've had so much success in failing at sales jobs because I'm just like, oh, didn't work out here, so I'm going to go get 5 more sales jobs and go fail some more, or just uproot my life here and go down there and learn this. So. Yeah, I mean, no matter what you want to learn, if I wanted to haul off and be a ballerina, like I'm going to feel awkward. And then, but I can be a great ballerina in a year's time if that's all I focused on for the next 365 days, 10 hours a day. Like, I'd be a hell of a ballerina. I'm not going to do it, but like, that's what the military does. They ingrain that in you. And if you want to be a high performance salesperson, you want to be jacked, you want to be a killer public speaker, it doesn't matter. You just have to go and you have to fumble along. And they say, so it takes 10 hours to become a master, but it takes 20 hours time on task to become proficient in anything. So you click the little stopwatch and it's like 1 second, 2 second, and you start practicing and you have 2 minutes in the trenches. But when you stop, then you click the button. That's your 2 minutes. When you get 20 hours in, then you can start self-correcting, self-coaching a little bit. You're proficient in it and you still have like 9,980 hours to go before you're a master. But once you become proficient, then you don't necessarily feel as dumb as you were. So you just have to, people will procrastinate 20 years saying, I want to do this. They'll put it off for 20 years for the first 2 minutes of practice, when really and truly, if they just would have spent 30 minutes getting over, you know, what the, like, this was me in the evangelist space, my personal development coaching deal. Like, I've been saying for 10 years that I wanted to get in this space. And then just one day I was like, you know what? I can't say I'm going to do it any longer. So I'm just, I hopped in. It was scary for me because I've been dreaming about it for my entire life.
Wow. And I mean, you just touched bases. I remember a few years back, I read this book by Dr. John C. Maxwell. He's actually here in Georgia. And the book is Fail Forward. And in that book, he talks about this explicitly. He says, listen, fail forward, fail fast. Because the quicker you fail, the quicker you're going to learn. You know, you learn more when you fail than you, when you, because when you win, you're celebrating, right? But when you fail, if you're a smart entrepreneur, you're a smart CEO, you're a smart leader, you're going to learn from those losses. In the military, we call it have act. After action reviews, meaning don't matter how good or how successful the mission was, let's talk about what was good, what was bad, and what could be improved. That's how it always went every time. And having that mindset of I'm going to fail, but I'm going to fail forward and I'm going to fail fast so that I can learn all the concepts, all the strategies I need so that I can be successful in this endeavor.
Yeah, it's all about recognizing those patterns within those moments of failure, because pretty much, again, like say in a sales position, in any specific industry, you're going to have so many types of objections, right? And it's usually a money objection, a spouse objection, a time objection, or, you know, it's whatever. But, you know, there's four or five objections. So you recognize these patterns, and then you can figure out all these different ways to combat the objections. So yeah, definitely getting comfortable with failure, because I know in times when I've won, like I knew not to get too high on it, which I mean, that's not always the case. Like I would be like, hell yeah, you know, but like, but yeah, like nobody learns from wins. So I'm totally a fail forward person, and it's all about the mindset behind. But you look at failure, like look at it as an experiment instead of a live or die situation, which, you know, if you look at everything as a experiment and you're just looking for feedback, then that's a way a lot easier than if you're going to doom yourself to just being called a failure. Like that's like, oh, I'm a crappy salesperson because I didn't make the sales today or this week. Well, it's like, where did I mess up? And I know, like, you're in sales, you've been in sales, you know, when you bombed a call or a situation where you probably should have had it, but you overspoke you know that you're not going to do that again. And if you do it again, like it was just an absolute fluke. But yeah, those situations are the best teachers, because you're like, oh, hell no, that was money in my pocket that they took the money back out of my pocket. Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. I want to ask you a question, and this is something that's not on agenda, but it's this idea. Just recently, I wrote a article on Medium, and I said that there's a difference. I said this is what I said. I said there's not a difference between people that can and won't, and then people that are willing but can't. And the idea is this: a person that can but won't means that they have the resources, they have the ability, they could collab with you, but they just won't do it. But I see so many entrepreneurs, I see so many business owners, so many leaders, they focus on the people that can because they feel somehow they can convince a person that can, but they've already showed that they won't. Mm-hmm. Instead of, to me, it's like, even though, and I'm looking at that, that's one person, and the person is willing, they're enthusiastic, but they lack the skills, the resources, the education, they can't really help you. So both of those parties yield zero at the beginning, but it's all in perspective. The perspective of it is this: if I'm a leader and I have people that can but won't, okay, they're to the side, they're on the bleachers, I can't focus on them. Those that are willing, maybe I can help them get an education, you know, to help me. That, you know, I could, it's all in perspective. Like, they're willing to do it, but they lack certain resources. Can I help them get that resources to be able to help me? And I think that is something that a lot of businesses miss. A lot of key leaders that's in companies miss that, and they focus on the wrong set of people. What do you think about that?
Well, I'm a firm believer in hiring slow and firing fast.
That's funny. Our last guest has said the same exact thing. Yeah.
But, you know, in the sales world, there two things for a sale to be made is money and interest. Like, if there's if there's money and no interest, then, you know, there's no sale. And if there's interest and no money, there's no sale. There has to be both those things. So, and it's also the mindset too, is like, the world is huge. So there are people out there that are willing and able to jump on board. And then it's the extreme ownership as well. Are you effectively communicating in a manner where the willing but may not be able or totally like fit? Like, are you giving them everything they need to succeed? So yeah, that's, it's multifaceted there. But yeah, you can – if people just won't, then they got to get out of the boat, and you can't worry about them because, like, that's like neighbor Jan eight houses down that like I never even met. Like, who can? I don't care what she's doing. I mean, I wish her well, but just move on to people that want to be in the space, and then know that just because there might not be an abundance of people in your circle right now that fit your team, that's just because, well, you're not doing enough outreach. Like, go out and find more people. Like, just go beat the bushes more. Like, if this is on, you know, on what you're talking about here, but yeah, I mean, there's an abundance of people and opportunity in the world, and if you just have the wrong team in place, then you might have to do the Deion Sanders, man, like, just bring 80 new people in, you know, just like, just redo the team. Like, he kicked everybody out of Colorado and brought a whole new team with him. So, like,
yeah, that's exactly what he did. So the next thing I want to move on to, before we get ready to come to a close, I want to talk about challenges and triumphs. Like, you talked a lot about, you know, mental imprisonment and how you broke free from that. You credit these hardships for making you, quote unquote, the animal that you are today. Discuss a little bit about that change in those stories a little bit.
Well, I'd say like the first bout of hardening of my mental state was I had reoccurring sleep paralysis at a very, very young age, like,
yeah, you did mention
three
that.
Or four bouts per week. And that's when the sleep demon lays on top of you and you're awake, but you can't move.
The succubus. So
it was very, very intense. And it lasted, I mean, it would happen three or four times a week, probably from the stress I was getting at schools and probably not a healthy diet. And just, you know, in times of high stress, then that happens more often, the sleep paralysis. But yeah, that forged some pretty wild pillars in my psyche. But then something else that pops up was, so I met my dad, my actual biological dad, when I was early 20s. And even though we were spitting images of each other, he was pretty high, well-established real estate developer in, you know, the city that I was born in. Mm-hmm. And, well, he really didn't want anything to do with me, even though he knew that I was him 2.0, and we could probably have collabed together and done some pretty cool stuff. But and he's passed away now. But I was in a mental prison. I was obsessed with wanting to be accepted by him. I wanted him to want to collaborate with me. I didn't understand like how you could have a spitting image of a son and knew he had the juice and just wouldn't lift a finger to say, hey, come on, let's go. Let me teach you how to do this real estate thing because I know you want to do it. So, I mean, that really put me in a dark place.
So he was in a can category, but he wasn't willing to do it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. He was, and to make matters worse, it wasn't just like he was passive about it. It's like, no, I'm not going to help you do this. Like, he would go as far as saying, like, let's do this. I would uproot my life and career from a different city, be heading back to hometown, and then bags packed, everything's in town. It's like, oh, well, change of plan. We're here now, not going to work out. And he did this like half a dozen times, man. Like that was it. It was rough. It was super rough. And at the end of the day, I had to cut ties with him, but I would coach myself through these situations. I actually created, I had multiple versions of myself within me. I created a firm father version of myself within my own mind. So I would talk myself through these things. And I know people talk about the voices in their head. They're usually talking about crazy folks, and I might be a little crazy, like, but a lot of great.
We all are, man.
If you're doing stuff, man, you're crazy. But man, silence and stillness are going to help you break free of whatever has you in chains mentally. Absolutely. Going and retracting from the world, fasting from vices, from food, from stimulus, and just really sitting with your thoughts and journaling, writing it out to oblivion. That's going to help you mull over the details to help you break free. And it's not a sexy time in life. And a lot of folks don't want to uncover what's on the other side of all that stimulus, of all those vices, because once everything's cleared out and you're really facing those internal demons, that's where the rubber hits the road. Like that's where the battles start. It's way too easy to just keep covering up the vices and like, oh, I'm going to hop on this program now. I've read this book and I keep consuming this and this and this. You just keep adding on and on and on. But yeah, the only way to break free from the mental prison is to clear out everything and work through it, because you're not going to add on and break free from a thought process. So
Josh, so real quick, you know, I know we're getting ready to wrap up, and this has been definitely a powerful show, and I think a lot of people are going to get a lot of value from it, just period. So I'm just, you know, elated. I don't think I can edify you to the level that you deserve. You've done so much in a short period of time, and I can just imagine that you got a lot more still to come. And I'm looking forward to it. And, you know, based on our previous conversation, we've even had this, you know, I have your back. I'm definitely in it. I like-minded people that are striving not only to help themselves, but help those that are around them. So let the listening audience know where they can find more information about you and make a connection with you. I know that you're getting ready to start your coaching program real soon. I'm hearing that you're getting ready to start a community around that. So let us know.
Yeah, man. So best way to get in contact with me is to click that little camera button on Instagram, and because that's where I put all my content for the most part. And then there's that link that says join Get Up Gang. The Get Up Gang, it's my free fitness and health community. And you'll click that button, join GitHub gang, and it'll shoot me a message and I'll accept you. And then it takes you right to the 21-day transformation jumpstart. Four simple steps to absolutely transform your body, which is the foundation of your mind. Mind and body work together. The four simple steps: cleaning out your guts, enhanced posture, prioritizing animal proteins, and then your daily movement practice. The Get Up Gang, you might have heard of the burpee. CrossFit demonized the burpee, but the Get Up, it's very symbolic. You get on the ground, you get back up. I'm currently doing the Get Up Master Challenge, which is the road to 10,000, and I'm doing 100 get ups per day for 100 days. And Brandon, I tell you, dude, it's like running sprints for 10 minutes. Now, you don't have to do 100 per day, but you just commit to a few a day and you work your way up to the 10,000, and then you're a get up master. But once you become a get up master, like you know, even when you're close to 10,000, even if you've done 1,000, if you're the best at getting up, well, then nothing could ever hold you down. And plus, getting the get up is full body exercise, strength, mobility, proprioception, which is your mind, body, and space, balance, rhythm, timing. Dude, there's just so many benefits to the get up. There's no excuses. You don't need any equipment. You don't need much time. But yeah, man, I know it's a little long-winded there, but contact me on Instagram. Join the Get Up Gang. There's a lot of good stuff in there. I'm still building on it, but it's pretty well laid out right now. And yeah, I'd love to connect. Love to help you get to where you want to be.
All right, guys. So also, too, want to point out right now we have, I want to make sure to put this in gallery mode. So if you want to connect with Josh, you can go ahead and scan that QR code. And that's going to take you straight to that link that he mentioned earlier. So we're trying to make that easy as possible. We want you to connect. If you're listening to this, you're trying to make a change. You're talking to a subject matter expert here, Josh Parrish, that came on, spoke for an hour. You want to take the insight that he delivered today. It's powerful, right? You're a business owner. You're a leader, right? You want to be a leader. These are things that you're not just born into. A lot of people like to say, oh, I was born this way. At the end of the day, these things are what happens when you are conditioned, right? So what Josh has talked about today is conditioned, some of it being self-mastery, right? And some of it just going through the fire and having those battle scars and leaning on that experience. So Josh, before we go ahead and end this, any parting words? Before we have parting words, what is one thing that you want to ask the next guest? And the previous guest question for you was, what do you want to be remembered for?
Well, I've been saying lately that I want to be the king, that I'm going to be the king of Norway. So I'm all about Vikings. So yeah, last Viking season, I believe one of the main characters were striving to be the king of Norway. And I was just like, yes, I'm going to be the king of Norway.
And what would be the question that you would ask the next guest that we have on the show?
What nation do they want to lead? Like they're what Viking nation do they want to lead? Ask them that, and they're going to be like, "Whoa, what does that mean?" But like, because you want Vikings on the show, Brandon.
Yeah, I actually watched the show. I love it. I love it. So I'm big into that stuff too. So yeah, I'm with you.
I threw you for a loop.
Yeah. Nah. So what are your last parting words that you would like to leave to the audience before we end?
Hey, inch by inch, life of the cinch. It's all about generating those that momentum through those small incremental wins, and have that the mind of a samurai, the vision of a samurai, and always be looking for the small win in the moment. And you'll rapidly accelerate.
Woo! And ladies and gentlemen, you know, you've heard it from the man himself, Josh Parrish, real estate mogul, mindset development, breaking chains in his life and breaking chains in other people's lives. Continue to plug in again. If you haven't already, go ahead and scan that QR code and connect with Josh. I'm telling you, you know, you don't want to wait a year from now. And guess what? He's too busy because he got 60,000 people following him, needing his time and attention, getting there now where you can, you know, be able to pick and strategize and come up with a battle plan. And that's what Josh is doing, is helping people come up with a strategic battle plan for their business and their lives. Josh, again, thank you for coming. I definitely appreciate you being a part of the Start Thinking Forward show. That's what we do. We think forward. And obviously you came here and you came here to think forward. We appreciate you very much, sir.
I appreciate you, man. I hope I'm a reoccurring guest.
Yes, sir. We definitely want you back. Definitely, definitely. I think that there's a lot more of subject. In an hour, 60 minutes is not enough time to do it. But let's definitely schedule something out. And we definitely talk. So, all right, guys, we look forward. We'll see you later. And if you don't do anything else, keep thinking forward. Thank you.
Wow, what an incredible episode. A huge thank you to our amazing guest for sharing their invaluable insights on business development, marketing, and leadership. If you've enjoyed today's conversation as much as we have, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. For those of you looking to elevate your business game, remember, Cerebro AI is your all-in-one, omnipresent digital marketing platform designed specifically for emerging businesses. We're here to help you think forward and scale up. Join us again next week for another deep dive with a captivating guest who will help you unlock the next level of your business journey. Until then, Brandon L. Draper wants to remind you to always start thinking forward. Take care and see you next time.